The foursome heads to the dance floor. Jane hands the phone across the bar to a bartender, who rushes it to Todd at his podium. Todd has already identified the brands of both cell phones by intercepting and analyzing the signals they've been sending to their local host towers. With this information, he's already prepared a substitute SIM card. Todd takes the phone and swiftly attaches a data cable to it. In a few seconds, he downloads the phone's entire memory. Then he writes a copy of the original directory information to the substitute SIM card, which is plugged into his console. He then quickly and skillfully pops open the case and replaces the phone's original one with the one from his console, which has the modified operating system, subscriber data, security information, and his virus scripts. He reassembles the phone. Now he owns Mark's phone. He hands it to the bartender, who walks down the bar and hands it back to Jane. She makes a quick call to her own phone number so there'll be some record of the phone having been used if Mark decides to check. A few minutes later, Mary, Mark, Sid, and Lois return. Jane gives Mark his phone back and says, "Thanks, man. That was a big help." She turns to the others and says, "Listen, girls, we gotta go. My sister said she's not feeling well and wants to go home. She'll be here in a few minutes." "Oh, damn. Do we have to?" says Mary. "Well, unless you want to walk back to Council Bluffs," says Jane. "Okay. Well, guys, it's been nice. Maybe some other night." "Nice to meet you," says Mark. "Same here," says Sid. Mary, Lois, and Jane walk across the crowded floor as Todd lowers the main lights and starts a laser show above. Under cover of darkness, while Todd creates a distraction with the lasers on the further wall of the club, they disappear unnoticed into the elevator room and ride to the top floor. They briefly look down from the balcony at their prey, and hurry into David's apartment. Inside, Mary says, "Well, did he get what he wanted?" "Yep, worked perfect. Thanks, guys. Get a drink and sit down and watch the power outage," says David. "So what do you think they'll do?" says Mary. "There's only two ways to do it. Either knock out the overhead feeder lines or go for the substation. Most probably the substation. That's what they said before, so I assume that's still the plan. But hitting the feeders is easier. Getting to that substation will be hard. It's got a pretty heavy fence and a lot of razor wire around it. But since Pete wants the power cut for a long time, the substation is the way to do it." Mary, Lois, and Jane get drinks, some cheese dip, corn chips, and sit around the big table waiting for the non-event. They watch the windows of the display, which is showing multiple security camera views of the floor below, and a roof-masked long shot of the substation that feeds the club a few blocks away. Mark and Sid sit at the bar for a few minutes watching the crowd and drinking their beers. Mark says, "They seem kind of nice." "Yeah, real nice. Too bad we won't be coming here after tonight." They go back to crowd watching while the gang in David's apartment are watching them. Soon Mark looks at his watch and says, "Hey, it's getting near 10. We better get moving." Sid quickly finishes his beer and they head for the coat room. As they pass Lance, he looks at them and says, "Later, dudes." Lance heads for Todd's console where he can get a full view of the events about to unfold and better coordinate his security team in the event of something unexpected. Todd's already switched over to a battery backup on his control console machines. Lance says to Todd, "You better get upstairs just in case. It's nearly 10 o'clock. I can handle things down here." "Right. Catch you later," says Todd as he heads for the elevator. Lance takes Todd's place behind the console. Time, 10 p.m. Mark and Sid give the place one last look and enter the coat room. They take their coats and put them on. Sid moves over to the emergency exit near the stage while Mark remains near the coat room. They wait for the power outage. Sid checks his watch. It's 10 o'clock on the dot. Todd rushes into David's apartment and hops over the back and onto the couch to David's left. He quickly pulls out a keyboard and starts opening windows. Jay pays close attention as he does. On David's big display, there now appear multiple windows showing the power distribution for Omaha, including all the substations. A large map appears of the middle United States, depicting ISO Midwest, which covers the Dakotas, Manitoba, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, parts of Missouri, Ohio, Illinois, even western Pennsylvania. The map pulses with lines of various colors and thickness showing the electrical power being moved throughout the region, as well as the major electrical generating plants. "How many maps have you got?" says Jay. "Oh, that's just the default display. I'll close some of them in a minute. I just want to watch the power flows when they hit the substation." Todd brings up a command prompt window and begins rapidly typing commands. Status windows appear displaying the parameters for the motor generator. A window appears showing a shot of the great flywheel in the basement, glistening in the spotlights as it spins, along with the two idle P&W engines attached to it. Another image shows an infrared image of the street outside where they see strange, multicolored thermal images of Joe's men hidden in the shadows. The mast camera, high on the roof, is tightly focused on the electric substation two blocks away. Suddenly, a city bus from nowhere careens towards the substation. They see the faint image of someone jumping from the door just as the bus crashes through the fencing and into the array of transformers. A huge explosion of sparks and flames erupts as the bus brings down the massive array of high-voltage lines. The loss of these, in turn, causes overloads at other substations. The effect cascades as one station after another trips offline. Lights in this quadrant of Omaha quickly begin to die. Only the flames, smoke, sparks, and electrical arcing of the substation are now visible in the darkness. At the club, there is an imperceptible dimming as one of the P&W jets immediately screams scrambles into action. On the screen, they see the flywheel in the basement spinning as before, but now numerous lights and panels on the jets have sprung to life. Todd's status display comes to life as many bar graphs and icons suddenly appear. Needles leap from their idle position on several dials into ranges underlain with green. Everything's normal downstairs. Engine 1 is running at 10%. No loss of phase. I've disconnected from the outside mains to keep out any surges, says Todd. Good, says David. At least we won't have to reboot any of the file servers downstairs. Yeah, I was dreading that. All those damn journals to be reread. It would take all day. That's for sure. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. We got a problem. Knocking out our substation caused a cascade. The high voltage feeders into the substation shorted out and is taking a bunch of other substations all around the city. And they're pulling down a bunch of high tension feeder lines from Iowa. I forgot how much power our substation draws. About half of Omaha's lost power so far, says Todd. Now they all intently study the graphs as Todd says, okay, this is really not good. There's a phase inversion starting because of the load imbalance. It's going to trip Council Bluffs 4 offline if the strain continues. Looks like ISO Midwest is about to lose 790 megawatts of capacity. Uh-oh, says David. I don't like the sound of uh-oh. What the hell exactly does uh-oh mean in English? And what's a freaking ISO? Asks Mike. Mike, uh-oh is a highly technical term meaning the shit is about to hit the fan. In simple terms, it means enough electric generating capacity for 650,000 homes is about to be lost. Council Bluffs 4 is one of the biggest coal-fired plants in the Midwest. The other generating plants in the system won't be able to take the extra load this time of year if it trips, because we're at peak demand right now. If it fails, the problems will cascade and the whole freaking upper Midwest electrical distribution system will collapse, and this is not a good time of year to be without electricity, answers David. I knew I should have bought batteries, says Mike. Once one of these generating plants spins down, it can take hours to bring it back online, assuming no damage to the plant. And an ISO is what we call an electric grid operator, says Todd. Todd furiously types commands into one of the windows. The lines emanating from CB4 are beginning to flicker as automatic circuits attempt to compensate for the phase instability. Red lines are starting to appear all across the ISO map as the compensating strain on distant transmission facilities grows. Uh-oh, the Palo nuclear plant is indicating that failsafe systems are about to force an emergency scram shutdown. It'll take weeks to restart, even after they flush out the Hollywood anti-nuke crowd, says Todd. Looks like a lot of other stations are about to trip offline, says Jay, as the red lines spread across the map. Suddenly, a large bolt of green flashes across the map from Texas through Oklahoma, Kansas, and into Nebraska. As it does, lines in Texas suddenly turn yellow. Todd lets out a, yee-haw! I did it! What just happened, says Mike. Todd just routed enough power from ISO Texas into ISO Midwest to replace the output of Council Bluffs 4 as it was about to trip offline, that's all. The red lines on the ISO Midwest map begin to turn yellow, then, one by one, green. The Palo station returns to green. The lines in Texas begin to return to green as gas-fired generating stations across the state quickly ramp up to their full midsummer capacity from their January reduced output level of a few minutes earlier. I knew there was enough extra capacity in Texas, so I borrowed it. Their systems are designed for air conditioning when it's 110 in Dallas. They only use a fraction of what they can produce this time of year. You can see the plants spinning up to meet the extra demand, brags Todd. Look, now the strain is lifted. CB4's phase is realigning. How'd you do that? Asks Mike. I told you how easy it was to break into the infrastructure, didn't I? Well, we've done it, of course. Paid off, it seems, says David. Sure did, but won't they find out about it? Todd and David laugh contemptuously, and David says, yeah, right. Even if they could, we did the right thing. Get millions of people warm who otherwise would be in the dark right now. I don't think the utility companies are going to want to publicize the fact that a bus in Omaha nearly shut the lights out from Pennsylvania to Hudson's Bay. Well, perhaps not, but about half of downtown Omaha seems to still be in the dark. What can you do about that? I'm way ahead of you, says Todd. I just text messaged the electric company and said we could feed while they fix their transmission lines if they can get some portable transformers set up. I think we better get the cots out again and make an announcement. There won't be any lights around here for a while, whether we feed or not. Most of the people downstairs won't have any heat when they go home, says David. We're probably looking at another sleepover. I'll get on it, says Todd, as he gets up to leave. Keep an eye on the displays for a while, but I think everything's fine now. You know, the birds really like these sleepovers. Seems they like the company. They chirp all night long. It's really amazing.
Time, 10:15 p.m. Mark and Sid continue waiting in the club. Their coats are too warm to wear indoors, so they take them off and put them over their shoulders. Finally, at 10:15, Mark walks over to Sid and says, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm calling Joe. He takes out his cell phone and dials Joe. Joe answers, but he tells Mark that the substation was blown at exactly 10 o'clock. But Joe, the lights here didn't even flicker. We're still in the club. Okay, will do. He flips his phone shut. Joe says they blew the station. We're to get out of here and go see Pete. They turn and leave.